Greetings, Northlings, and welcome to Haunted Up North. Hey, Victoria here, just hanging out, ready to spookify your day with some spine-tingling tales recorded for your listening pleasure from the north of the UK. Get ready for some goosebumps and maybe a few jump scares along the way. And whatever you do, don't look back, because horror is hot on our heels and there's certainly no escaping it. In today's Haunted Up North, we've got some supernatural slasher action from the depths of Victorian London. But before we begin, here's a super smashing shout out to Mr. Purple Triangle for kindly supporting the show on Ko-fi. Follow Mr. Purple Triangle on X at Mr. P Triangle for groovy posts about his hometown Shrewsbury and intriguing thoughts on all things paranormal. A rip-roaring clamour of appreciation also goes to Origami Nick, another firm and favourite fellow of Haunted Up North's esteemed list of followers. Thank you, Nick, for subscribing to our early riser tier, and thank you for every bit of support you've already given the podcast. Nick was the winner of our last Haunted Up North prize draw, and he's now the proud owner of a secret spooky story, recorded for his ears only. So I hope you enjoyed it, Nick. Check out Nick's account on Instagram at paperbotherer, because he's quite the origami wizard and makes some rather magical and intricate paper creations. Thank you, Mr. Purple Triangle and Origami Nick, for contributing to our hallowed haunted cause, and may the UK's constant stream of unnecessarily personified storms forever leave your fences and roof slates intact. So, let's get down to business. A super scary Julian Clary kind of business, in fact, because today's episode is accompanied by the image of an early Victorian man-creature skulking within the dimly lit corners of 19th century London, who casts a savage shadow of mystery wherever he treads. In October 1837, a young woman called Mary Stevens was making her way homeward on foot through the South London fields of Clapham Common after visiting her parents in Battersea. Her destination was Lavender Hill, her employer's residence, where she worked as a household servant. Suddenly, a high-pitched blood-curdling scream broke out, alerting a crowd of passers-by who promptly surged in Mary's direction, for it was Mary herself who had let out the piercing cry. Upon reaching Mary's side, they found her shaken, scratched and bruised, barely able to recount the horrific assault she had but mere moments earlier experienced at the hands of a gruesome assailant. Mary explained in trembling gasps that an unexpected figure had violently accosted her as she journeyed through the park. Without warning, Mary's attacker gripped her in a vice-like hold, folding his arms around her tightly before kissing her about the face, ripping parts of her clothes from her body, and touching her flesh with what looked and felt like claws, which she afterwards described as cold and clammy as those of a corpse. Spooked by the ferocity of her scream, the figure fled the scene and bolted into the gloom, leaving behind no trace of his existence save for the trembling form of his victim, Mary Stevens. Though none could locate the whereabouts of this dreadful perpetrator, he was, however, spotted near Lavender Hill the following day, leaping into the path of a horse-drawn carriage, which caused the coachman to lose control of the vehicle, crash and sustain serious injuries. Several bystanders stated that he made a miraculous escape by scaling a 9-foot-high wall, all the while laughing with an eerie screeching cackle. As time passed, tales of this mysterious figure began to circulate widely, and gradually, both the media and the general public adopted a name for him, calling him Springheel Jack. Springheel Jack was described by those who claimed to have laid eyes upon him as having metallic clawed fingertips and eyes resembling red balls of fire. Tall, slender, with an air of gentility, he wore a black coat and helmet above a tight-fitting oilskin garment. Rumours also suggested he could exhale blue and white flames and spoke in fluent English. As noted by Sir John Cowan, the Lord Mayor of London, on the 9th of January 1838, during a public session at his official Mansion House residence, Mary Stevens was not the first of Spring Hill Jack's supposed victims. In fact, he stated, several servant people about Kensington, Hammersmith and Ealing had dreadful stories to tell of this ghost or devil. In late September 1837, the very first sighting of Jack was reported when a businessman returning home late one night was startled to see what looked like a man leaping over the tall railings of the Barnes Cemetery on Barnes Common. This human-like form landed directly before him for what seemed like an eternity, though the altercation lasted merely seconds. During this time, the businessman observed that the perpetrator was a muscular man of devilish features, with pointed ears, a sharp nose, and protruding glowing eyes. It was not long after this initial glimpse of the soon-to-be legendary Spring Hill Jack that 17-year-old Polly Adams, a barmaid returning home from a local fair, saw a huge cloaked figure silhouetted against the sky as she passed by the gallows which stood on Shooter's Hill Road in the Blackheath area of South London. With its cloak billowing in the breeze, the figure ran at her with a series of bounding leaps that appeared distinctly inhuman. Polly described his eyes as glowing red, with a mouth that spit hot blue flames directly towards her face, the warmth of which she could feel burning against her cheeks. The figure then lunged at her with what Polly described as ironclad fingers, tearing at her clothing, leaving deep scratches on her stomach, as his eyes bulged from their sockets and his mouth let out a shrill, ringing laugh. After ripping her clothing almost entirely from her body, the man stepped back and laughed once more, then vanished into the night in the same otherworldly manner in which he had appeared. Letters began flooding into Mansion House from all across London, each recounting the wicked pranks of an unearthly, unknown assailant terrorising the city. One correspondent reported that several young women in Hammersmith had been terrified into dangerous fits, with some sustaining serious injuries by a sort of claw that the miscreant wore on his hands. Another source stated that in areas like Stockwell, Brixton, Camberwell and Vauxhall, some individuals had succumbed to fear, while others had suffered seizures. Meanwhile, another account mentioned multiple sightings of the mischief maker in Lewisham and Blackheath. At around 9 p.m. on the 19th of February 1838, Jane Alsop, a young woman of 18 years, opened the door of her father's residence to a man boldly claiming to be a police officer. He directed her with authority to fetch a candle from the house, stating, "We have caught Spring Hill Jack here in the lane." Mrs. Alsop did as the man requested, after which, according to her court testimony, she handed the candle to the person who appeared enveloped in a large cloak and whom she at first really believed to be a policeman. The instant she had done so, however, he threw off his outer garment and, applying the lighted candle to her breast, presented a most hideous and frightful appearance, and vomited forth a quantity of blue and white flame from his mouth, and his eyes resembled red balls of fire. From the hasty glance which her fright enabled her to get at his person, she deserved that he wore a large helmet, and his dress, which appeared to fit him very tight, seemed to her to resemble white oilskin. Without uttering a sentence, he darted at her, and catching her partly by the dress and the back of her neck, placed her head under one of his arms and commenced tearing her gown with his claws, which she was certain were of some metallic substance. She screamed out, loud as she could, for assistance, and by considerable exertion got away from him and ran towards the house to get in. Her assailant, however, followed her and caught her on the steps leading to the hall door, where he again used considerable violence, tore her neck and arms with his claws, as well as a quantity of hair from her head, but she was at length rescued from his grasp by one of her sisters. One particularly notable detail witnessed during this attack was that, as Jack retreated in the wake of Jane's escape, his cloak was momentarily dropped upon the ground, which, according to Jane's sister, was immediately retrieved by another individual, leading some theorists to speculate that Jack may have had an accomplice to his crimes. Over a week later, another incident occurred, this time in an area of East London, where 18-year-old Lucy Scales and her sister were returning from a visit to their brother, a butcher who lived in Limehouse. Lucy stated that, as the two young women were passing along Green Dragon Alley, they encountered a cloaked man standing before them in the passage and blocking their path. As they drew near the strange individual, he unexpectedly emitted a quantity of blue flame towards her, which temporarily blinded her. Subsequently, she collapsed to the ground, experiencing a series of intense seizures which continued to affect her for several hours. Alerted by the sound of his sister's screams, Lucy's brother, whose residence was close to Green Dragon Alley, gathered her up and returned with her to his house, where his other sister gave a detailed description of the criminal. She explained that he was tall and thin, wearing a large dark cloak, and carrying a small lamp or bullseye lantern, like those used by law enforcement. He did not speak or attempt to manhandle them, but quickly retreated the moment he committed his heinous act. Local police were unsuccessful in their attempts to apprehend Lucy's attacker, and though several people were questioned on the matter, nobody was ever charged. In 1845, Jack was accused for the first time of murder. Jacob's Island, a notorious Bermondsey slum on the south bank of the River Thames, was the scene of a fatal assault on a 13-year-old sex worker named Maria Davis. Bystanders watched with horror as a shadowy assailant bounded across the slum's network of wooden walkways and closed in on Maria as she crossed the bridge of an open sewer. Seizing her by the shoulders, he exhaled a burst of fire at her face and then hurled her off the bridge. Maria's deathly screams faded as her body slowly disappeared into the foul-smelling quagmire that oozed below. In the wake of his violent assaults on London's vulnerable young women, Springhill Jack's horrific notoriety evolved into a celebrity-like status, and he became one of the most renowned characters of the early Victorian period. Many a play, novel, and penny dreadful was dedicated to the dramatisation of his monstrous activities, and as reports of Springhill Jack sightings grew, additional traits were added to his already extensive list of superhuman attributes, such as the ability to leap through the air and even scale entire buildings. Though his infamy increased, the Springhill Jack sightings eventually became less frequent. However, additional reports of this fearful villain soon spread to other parts of England. In mid-April 1838, the Brighton Gazette reported that a gardener in Rose Hill, Sussex, had been terrorised by a creature of unknown nature that, though it bore no real resemblance to Jack's physical attributes, was nonetheless linked to his growing list of misdeeds. The gardener asserted that this creature had been shaped like a bear or some other four-footed animal. He then described how it growled at him, climbed the garden wall, ran on all fours along it, and then jumped down to chase the witness around the premises before retreating over the wall. A devilish phantom was witnessed in Northamptonshire, described as having horns and the eyes of a flame, while in East Anglia, reports of attacks on mail coach drivers soared, and the legend of Jack was even associated with the infamous Devil's Footprints phenomena, which occurred in the late winter of 1855. In 1872, the News of the World, a national tabloid newspaper, reported that a mysterious apparition, dubbed the Peckham Ghost, that bore a similar alarming appearance to Springhill Jack, was once again haunting the residents of southeast London years after gaining widespread media attention. In the spring of 1873, it appeared that Jack had ventured as far north as Sheffield, assuming the guise of a menacing villain that locals referred to as the Park Ghost. In 1877, frightened residents of Caister in Norfolk recoiled with terror when they saw a bizarre form with huge ears donned in a garment resembling a sheepskin, vault from rooftop to rooftop before leaping to the ground and propelling itself through the town, seemingly impervious to gunshots resounding from the barrels of angry locals. In August of that same year, a sentry at Aldershot Garrison in Hampshire related a curious tale that had occurred one night while he was on duty at the North Camp. A silhouette advanced towards him from the darkness, but instead of fleeing when the soldier questioned its presence, the figure, seemingly undeterred, continued to approach him, laid a cold, clammy hand upon his cheek, and delivered several sharp slaps to the soldier's face. The creature was wearing a tight-fitting oilskin suit, a shining helmet, and was grinning from ear to ear in a highly menacing manner. After shooting in the assailant's direction, to no visible effect, the sentry witnessed the culprit leap high into the air and breathe a plume of fire in his direction. It then let out a cackle before retreating into the gloom with a string of astonishing bounds. Not long after the incident at Aldershot, Springhill Jack was once again spotted at Newport Arch in Lincoln, Lincolnshire, wearing a sheepskin outfit. A furious crowd pursued him, firing shots that again appeared to have no impact, but he escaped via means of his all-too-familiar ability to superhumanly launch himself to freedom. In 1888, there were claims that Jack was spotted on the rooftop of St. Francis Xavier's Church on Salisbury Street in Everton, North Liverpool. Then, in 1904, similar reports surfaced on William Henry Street nearby. Mrs. Hudson, a resident of William Henry Street, was alerted one night, sometime around 9 p.m, to the vision of a shadow moving on the wall outside her window. Upon further investigation, she saw what looked like a giant bat lurking on the corner of the street. The very next night, the shadow returned, but this time it moved with a curious hopping motion, and she clearly saw that it wasn't a bat, but a man wearing a long dark cloak and black boots. Whoever was behind the Springhill Jack mask, this elusive criminal was never officially identified. His extraordinary abilities, coupled with the extended period over which he was said to operate, have given rise to a multitude of theories about his true nature and identity. Skeptical investigators attribute the tales of Springhill Jack to mass hysteria, suggesting they stem from long-standing legends of bogeymen or devils, or from exaggerated urban myths about a man fleeing across rooftops. In the early 19th century, London was rife with reports of pale human-like ghosts stalking and preying on solitary pedestrians. These tales contributed to a unique ghost tradition in the city, which some believe laid the groundwork for the later legend of Springhill Jack. The most notable of these early entities was the Hammersmith ghost, reported in Hammersmith in 1803 and 1804, and again in 1824. Another similar apparition, known as the Southampton ghost, was said to assault people at night, displaying traits like jumping over houses and towering at over 10 feet tall, much like Springhill Jack. Various speculative paranormal theories surrounding the origins of Jack suggest he could be an extraterrestrial identity with non-human features and superhuman abilities due to life on a high-gravity planet. Other theories propose he might be a summoned demon or a self-manifested entity causing spiritual unrest. Some theorists do, however, believe that Jack may have been an actual person or persons who, inspired by ghostly urban legends, took to the streets of London to cause, for their own entertainment, a whirlwind of macabre chaos, and was later imitated by others following suit. This last was a theory favoured by the Lord Mayor, who pointed the finger at a group of young aristocrats, believing them to be responsible for the Springhill Jack incidents, attributing the whole saga to a reckless bet. In 1840, a rumour began making the rounds that the Marquess of Waterford, an Irish nobleman, may have been connected to the Springhill Jack attacks. Not only was there evidence of the Marquess having been involved in confrontational altercations with both women and police, his violent outbursts, crude humour, and acts of vandalism often made headlines. He was also notorious for taking on any dare presented to him. Those familiar with his disreputable behaviour had christened him the Mad Marquis, and he was even said by British lexicographer E. Cobham Brewer to have amused himself by springing on travellers unawares to frighten them, and from time to time others have followed his silly example. He was also in the London area when the Jack attacks were at their height. Following the assault on Jane Allsop, a man named Thomas Milbank was overheard by patrons of the East End Morgan Arms pub confessing to being responsible for the crime. He was immediately taken into custody and tried at Lambeth Street Court. However, despite the authorities having substantial evidence against him, he managed to evade conviction based purely on the fact he was unable to breathe fire. In July 1847, a Spring Hill Jack investigation in Tynmouth led to one Captain Finch's conviction for assaulting two women. He was reportedly dressed in a bullock's hide coat, skullcap, horns and mask during the incidents. The true identity and nature of Spring Hill Jack continues to elude definitive explanation. Some theories suggest he might have been a flesh and blood individual who haunted the streets of London, while others lean towards the notion of mass hysteria gripping the public imagination. Alternatively, he could be an enduring urban legend that took on a life of its own, or perhaps even a ghost story that spiralled into something far more pervasive and unsettling. But, regardless of its origins, the tale of this horrific Victorian figure, also known as the Demon of London, has firmly entrenched itself in pop culture and continues to captivate imaginations to this day. So what do you think? Demon, ghost, aristocrat, copycat, mass hysteria, or alien? Or just people? People being weird. I think possibly there's something in the idea that it's those naughty aristocrats again. Who knows? It could be all those things. Breathing fire, I'm pretty sure, or the illusion of breathing fire could be easily achieved by spitting some kind of fuel from your mouth above a naked flame, couldn't it? So even though that specific detail might seem an otherworldly power on the surface of things, actually, it wouldn't be that hard for a human to replicate it. Perhaps that's why Jane Allsop's attacker requested she bring a candle with her out into the street, so they could use the flame to spit some, I don't know, gas or whatever into it. Still a very horrible thing to do to someone, regardless of whether you're an actual demon or not. I personally believe it was more than one individual conducting what some types might consider jolly japes at the expense of the working classes, but it still doesn't explain the act of leaping really high over buildings. It's likely a blend of factors that contribute to the legend, a mix of mischievous pranks, widespread fear and panic, urban myths, and perhaps some misinterpretations of sightings of shadowy figures lurking in the darkness. Over time, all of these elements have possibly intertwined and amplified each other, adding layers of complexity to the enduring mystery of Spring Hill Jack. But regardless of the actual facts, Spring Hill Jack continues to captivate and intrigue people as a significant figure in English folklore, and I really enjoyed learning all about him. I hope you enjoyed listening to all the things I learnt about him. Gruesome and violent though the stories may be. Thanks for listening, everyone, and for letting me inject a bit of Spring Hill Jack soul into your day. I hope you found this devil, alien, prankster, criminal, ghost to be a good one, and that you were suitably entertained by it. Long live London and all who haunt her, and may her power forever compel you to leap wisely, cackle constructively, and breathe only the flame of warmth and goodwill towards everyone you meet. Catch you later. Best of luck. Bye. Bye. Victorian man creature.